I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Senior contributor Christopher Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, where he is chef and owner. We have our regular contributor Alex Province of Hartford. Our regular contributor Anthony DeSario, who is a Connecticut bartender and lives in Brantford, Connecticut. And you can tell your friends, no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. Lori Mack, the producer, is with us on the show. Very quickly, wanted to let you know that I have been going light on pasta for several months. It's a calorie thing. It has to be really good for me to try it. You know, and so my friend Rose Criollo says, let's go to dinner. I want to take you to dinner. And she said, be my guest at Lorchio. This is on State Street in New Haven, an Italian restaurant. So I said, sure, you know, I'll try some ravioli. Maybe I'll have a half order of ravioli.
And a half order.
But I'm really going to have the grilled salmon. And so first out comes the ravioli. And I just said, I'll just have a bite of one of these ravioli and call it a day. And this was the chef's ravioli, homemade, filled with pesto. So pesto on the inside, not the outside, nestled in this light red sauce. Swooned. I almost fell in my chair. It was so good.
That's healthy.
So Rose is concentrating on her ravioli filled with chickpeas. Chechi.
Ooh,
so
oh, wow.
We were crazed, the two of us. And I look over, I look at Rose, and she said, we just ate 12 ravioli.
Nice.
We ate 12 ravioli. It was so good. This is so worth a car trip. Okay,
what's wrong
the
with that?
Salmon entree was very, very well done. Delicious. And we tried a dessert that unexpectedly, neither one of us was really honestly that interested in it. And it was the chef's dessert crepe. And it was filled with mascarpone cheese and a slick of fresh blueberry sauce. Its edges were cooked until they were very crispy so that the edges shattered in your mouth and had that burned buttery kind of feel to them when you chewed them. Mm. It was one of the best desserts I have had in the longest time.
Say more, say more.
Yeah, cheers to him, because where did the crepe go? They love them as a dessert.
I did skip right over it. I thought, no, I don't want that.
Yeah. And of course, that's the one.
It was unbelievable. And their outdoor garden is open right now, so that's Lorchio. It looks like it's spelled or it's pronounced Lorcio, L-O-R. CIO State Street.
Put it on the list.
In New Haven. Wanted to let you know that our colleagues at WGBY, the public television station in Springfield, is having on June 6th its Asparagus Festival in Hadley at the Town Common. Free admission, and there's all kinds of things to eat and drink. It is a huge asparagus place, it turns out, Hadley, Mass. So I think it might be one of the biggest in the world, I'm told.
Yeah, really.
It's amazing to me.
And their asparagus is unbelievable.
We're going to our cocktails now, but I've got to tell you this quickly. If you're going to Cape Cod, I've got a new eating destination for you. It's called Pan d'Avignon in Hyannis, of all places. P-A-I-N, like bread, d'Avignon. It's been a large industrial bakery. It's supplying the Cape's best restaurants. First-class bread. Oh, my goodness, is their bread something. And somebody on their staff said, let's turn this big building into a restaurant, cafe, and boulangerie. And so they do French Mediterranean food of all kinds, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It is terrific. The space is fabulous. The bread and pastries are so excellent. The meal's very, very good. You can do small bites, entrees, lunch, just have bread, dessert, whatever you want to do. So if you're going to the Cape, this will be your stop. This is a stop you're going to want to make. Pan d'Avignon. It's on our website right now at foodschmooze.org. It's located on a small road right at the edge of the airport in Hyannis.
Very cool.
And it's just been transformed as a space. And when you leave, they hand you a loaf of bread in a paper bag. They gave
me a chocolate chunk
almond bread.
How far did that last? That didn't make the Connecticut.
In the door. It was dessert at home. It was so crazy.
We were flying there to get a
crumbs out of the seat of the car.
So just
can you walk from the airport?
We're going to give you the whole thing at foodschmooze.org. Yeah, I'm trying to get Alex to fly us out there.
Just to get us croissants and come back.
A cargo load of croissants.
Here we go. All right, here's what happened. I can't wait to get to this cocktail segment. Here is what happened. I was fooling around with everybody here on the show last week, and I said, know what? Why can't somebody make up a frozen, dark, and stormy? And so we were knocking ideas around. And so Anthony DiSerio, our bartender, goes off in his direction. Everybody goes off in a different direction. And so I came up with the frozen, dark, and stormy, and Anthony came up with his drink, which, what are you calling it?
I really don't even know how to name this one. It's just a combination of every classic rum drink and a few classic cocktails going all the way back to the 1800s.
It's a ginger beer pina colada.
And it's also technically a fizz as well.
Okay, Ramos fizz, you mean?
Yeah, it's a Ramos gin fizz.
Yeah, okay.
Version of a pina colada meets a dark and stormy.
Yeah, I know.
And
you can make this, I mean, it does have things like orange flower water, but you can now get that around.
Yeah, you can get it or you can actually eliminate it. The orange flower water really goes well with the original recipe with the gin where we turned it around and used rum instead.
Tell me about your recipe, what you did.
So with my recipe, we were talking about, you know, modifying the dark and stormy and, you know, the main components, you know, a citrus, a ginger beer, and a rum. Usually is a dark rum, Barbados rum, or Bermuda rum, I should say, or whatever your favorite dark rum is.
What'd you mix together?
So what I did was I took a Connecticut-owned rum company called Real McCoy. We used their five-year rum.
Very good.
And we also added some fresh lime juice. We did a little simple syrup.
That's just sugar and water.
Just sugar and water. A lot of people are apprehensive. I used egg whites because that's in the original drink, and that's, you know, a very classic in drink.
Makes
it frothy, gives it a nice silky texture. I did go to the grocery store. You don't have to, but if you're worried about it, I just bought a carton of pasteurized egg whites.
Okay.
And I just put about 1/4 ounce of the egg white in there, some heavy cream, and I dry shook that all together. To get everything
now,
to emulsify.
What he means by that is...
Which is I put it in a shaker.
No ice.
And just shake it till it gets nice and, you know, nice and frothy. You know that you've mixed everything together. Then you add your ice to the shaker and, you know, you make Faith's favorite sound here.
shake
it up.
Yeah, shake it up again.
Yeah.
How about a stormy cool fizz?
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Cool fizz. That's it.
A
right
cool
there.
Fizz. So, and then now we're going to strain that out into a chilled cocktail glass, no ice, and we topped it off with chilled ginger beer, and that added a very nice, pour it in slow, because it adds a very, very nice, thick, foamy head to it. Yeah. It's a creamy consistency, the ginger, the lime, the rum, and the main secret ingredient that we did do, instead of using ice cubes, is Faith had froze pineapple, and we used about a 1/4 cup?
Yes, 1/4 cup.
We did 1/4 cup of Faith's frozen pineapple as ice cubes instead to chill everything down. So
it was more like a thud, 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 thud.
It really was. It really thumped around a little. But we did add a little extra ice.
Can we also say the recipe for this is on the website, foodschmooze.org. And we tell you the kind of ginger beer. We have a ginger beer that is beyond any ginger beer you've ever had. It's unbelievable.
Oh, it's
unbelievable. So and you can buy it around. So... But you've got to get this. It's at foodschmooze.org. Oh, Anthony, thank you so much. And here comes the frozen, dark, and stormy, which would normally be rum, lime juice, and ginger beer.
Ginger beer over
ice. Simple.
Done. Just a Done. Modified mule, yeah.
So I'm thinking, how can we freeze this up? And so Anthony helped me with proportions, and then we tasted until we all said a little this, a little that. And so what we've got in that drink is dark rum of your favorite brand, some lime juice. I cut up a fresh pineapple and then froze it in the freezer, all those chunks, and put some frozen pineapple chunks in. And I put that all in the blender. So the rum, the lime juice, and the frozen pineapple served as my ice cubes. And then threw in a few more extra ice cubes just to give it a little extra juice so that it's not too boozy. Just blended it and then filled the cocktail glass about 2/3 of the way up and then topped it off on the top with a sparkling ginger beer. Mm-hmm. And then you just pull the drink right through the ginger beer. And it's a combination of ginger and pineapple, and Oh, and then it used a little chunk of pineapple on the edge of the glass.
The ginger comes first.
And it's frozen.
It's ginger. Yeah. If you can make a frozen margarita, you can make this. It's just, you know.
I like adding the soda at the end, too. Yeah.
It's a nice, like, digestif. It's a palate cleanser. I mean, that is an all-day drink in the summer. I mean, I could definitely start with those.
Good, good. Oh, yeah. So also on the website right now, foodschmooze.org, the frozen, dark, and stormy. I use frozen fruit. Remember, Alex, last summer, Alex and I were texting back and forth because I think you started it and said, I'm having a watermelon martini.
Oh, right.
And you had put, did you put the watermelon in the freezer? Because I make a margarita with frozen watermelon.
I just remember they were so good.
And then I thought, I have to do that right now. And so I got a watermelon, cut it all up, and threw bags of it in the freezer so that it's always ready.
Yep. That's right.
Are good ice cubes,
when
too.
Using them, yeah.
When you go away for the weekend, if we have fruit that's sitting on the counter, Matt will always put it in a Ziploc bag, and we put them in the freezer. So you open up a freezer, and there's like strawberries, blueberries, watermelon, everything's in Ziploc bags ready to go. Yeah. And then we'll throw that into the blender.
Yeah, it's great to keep around because you have fresh fruit all year round. And so you can use that for any type of a cocktail or, if you're going to make some type of a sauce. There's so many ways to preserve fruit and keep them and use them all year round. Like, I'll definitely freeze blood oranges. Because I love blood orange, and we only have a very small window.
When is the season for that?
It just ended.
Oh, thank you.
I have some for you because I bought a ton of them and squeezed. I have containers if anybody wants
nice.
It.
Oh, yeah.
I have containers at my house.
Are you freezing them?
They're frozen,
oh,
yes.
Oh, perfect. Wow.
And then in Ziploc bags, too.
Did you do ice cube trays?
No, I did small ramekins so that I can just take a hot spoon
and
just
out.
Do one scoop and add it to if I'm making a vodka martini or whatever I'm making or
pop
pan
right
sauce.
In.
Yeah, and Chris, I liked your idea of taking a chunk of fruit, putting, say, a strawberry in the ice cube tray.
Yeah.
You certainly can just freeze the strawberry itself, but it's also possible to put that strawberry in water in the ice cube tray, and then when it's in your drink, it's beautiful looking.
Yeah, that's it's a great way to just present in a cocktail, right?
Oh, yeah.
If you want just a wow factor. And then when the ice melts, you can eat the strawberry.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to do things like that. Like around the holiday time, I'll usually take pomegranate and mint.
Sure.
And I'll put those in the ice cubes, and it gives it like a little mistletoe kind of look. I mean,
I know
we just came out of that season and don't want to think about that right now.
It's a great idea.
A good idea.
Or like blueberries in your sangria ice cubes and things like that.
And these are easy to do. They don't take a lot of time, and the wow factor is huge.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When people get that and they look in the glass, it's like, wow. And really, how long did it take to scoop the pomegranate and put a couple pieces of mint in the tray, fill it with water, and throw it in the fridge?
Or blueberries and a little lemon zest or something like this. So the little things that will come out in the cocktail as you drink it, as it sits as well. Yeah.
Anthony, do you remember when Prasad Chirnumala, the chef and owner of Thali, the very high-end Indian restaurant in New Haven, entered the cocktail competition, which is coming up again this year on June 25th, and we hope to see you there at Riverview at 6 o'clock. We'll tell you about it later in the show. It sells out every year. It is so amazing, and we will all be there. And Anthony's going to give a special award for the best craft cocktail. So there'll be the champion of the Food Schmooze gold, and then there'll be a bronze and silver, and then there will be the winning craft cocktail.
Yeah.
At a previous competition, Prasad made a cocktail using those spherical balls about the size of a pool table ball.
Yeah, yeah.
And he froze orchids
in
the center of each one.
What an effect.
And had dry ice coming off the table with these orchids and floating in this thing.
It was
mind-blowing. So gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's
great for presentation, and it's great for making a good drink, too, because sometimes you just want to keep your drink cold and you don't want it to get watered down that fast.
Yeah.
So a lot of those larger cubes will do that for you. And a lot of people flavor them too, adding bitters to them.
Oh, good idea.
And then the bitters will slowly seep out into the drink.
I've never thought of that.
It's a race against time.
Next week, Faith and I should do something with a little bourbon and Aperol frozen ice cubes and something like that. Because with the low alcohol content, that should be
able
to freeze
Aperol.
Too.
Yeah.
You can freeze anything with a lower alcohol content. You could freeze wine.
Sure.
I've tried that, and it doesn't taste so great. I thought I was onto something, and I just couldn't get it to taste the way it tasted.
Did you freeze it with a stick in it?
No.
Alex makes lollipops.
All right, everybody, thank you so much. I'm Faith Middleton. Wait till you see what we have coming up on this show. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry, more mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to Cornbread.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Brosberry of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, our regular contributor Alex Province of Hartford, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, and our resident bartender on the show, Anthony DeSario, is here. Thanks also to senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. And thank you, first and foremost, for listening, I should say. Here we go. As promised, we had David Guas on the line to talk with us about his book, Grill Nation. He might be familiar to you if you watch the Travel Channel show. It's called American Grilled, and David is often a judge, and you've probably seen him on the Today Show and various other places. So this Grill Nation book, we found a few things in here that we liked, and in fact, we made one just now. Chris, these tequila burgers, we just did this. This is grilled chicken tequila burgers.
Yum. My new favorite chicken burger.
Yeah, really? So good.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what's in here. Ground chicken.
Simple.
Yeah, so simple. So ground chicken breast, fresh chopped cilantro, garlic cloves, jalapeno pepper that is seeded and chopped. You had a little pickled jalapeno around and used that. Some panko crumbs. That's a Japanese breadcrumb that's very light. Just a couple tablespoons of tequila.
That's the ingredient.
It's the ingredient. Lime zest, salt and pepper, soy sauce, some sliced bell peppers, some sliced onions. And then you just whip together this cilantro lime mayonnaise,
regular prepared mayonnaise, a little cilantro, some fresh chopped chives, lime zest, and lime juice. Can't be easier than that.
And then all that stuff comes together. You make a burger and then put it either on your gas grill or your charcoal grill or under the broiler in your oven or in a cast iron skillet, whatever you want to do. And this was, wouldn't we all say, this was terrific.
Yeah. It's outstanding. Yeah.
Bold flavor.
And the
right?
sauce, we really love the sauce on this.
The tequila was in a shot glass on the side.
Mine was. Unfortunately. No.
Is that what the recipe called for?
No.
That's how I read it.
Hey, but David Guas, is it the tequila that's acting as a tenderizer for the meat?
Yeah, it helps. It helps to tenderize it, exactly.
And the soy sauce would be the same, wouldn't it?
It does, yeah, you're right. I mean, basically those two ingredients right there will help to sort of break down things. That's why oftentimes you don't want to over-marinate with alcohols and stronger, especially the Asian ingredients. They tend to really sort of start to manipulate things and tenderize when it can, you know, it can go the opposite direction if you let it sit too long. So, but yeah, in this particular one, it is, just like y'all were talking about, super easy and very flavorful and a wonderful way to sort of start the grilling season.
You tell us to put the chicken, cilantro, garlic, jalapeno pepper in the food processor and just to pulse it three or four times because you want to over-combine it. But could you mix it up by hand, too?
Sure, you can if you're knife skilled.
That's what we did.
That's what I did.
you write a book and you want everybody to pick it up and be able to start right away and not worry about, you know, the first procedure saying, you know, small dice or perfect brunoise or something like that. And I was like, what is that? Mean? What is that? This is a technical book.
There's a gorgonzola grilled pear crostini. And, of course, if you're grilling bread for me, I'm happy camper just to start with. And then we've got this salty, creamy gorgonzola on top that's with these crisp, fruit-like pears, and you get this beautiful texture here. So the Bartlett pears in wedges. There's a little cream cheese in this thing, a little dry sherry. That's the stealth ingredient. There's butter in here, which is beautiful.
We notice a theme here already, right?
No, we noticed.
Yep.
And pecans, salted roasted pecans are in here with a touch of rosemary and a little bit of honey.
Yes.
Oh.
I'm a big fan of pecans. You know, I love walnuts for certain things. They tend to be really strong. So I think that, you know, pecans offer that sort of nice, real nutty, kind of woody flavor and robust and earthy without being sort of overly strong like walnuts can be.
Hey, David, you know something I'm noticing that we're getting, as people start declaring themselves experts of this, that, and the other thing, we are getting more and more intimidated about using a simple grill. And
right.
I just want to remove that, don't you?
I do. I mean, I think that this book really does that. I mean, you know, male, female, gas, grill versus charcoal. I mean, you know, to each his own. And you know, obviously I have a preference, but, you know, the book is you know, being up in D.C., I'm very right down the middle here, so bipartisan. And I try to just, you know, reflect, you know, if you do have a gas grill, what you need to remember about them, and then charcoal the same way. And, you know, even if you have a little cast iron French grill and you're trying to do some of these recipes inside, I mean, it's obviously not going to be the exact same as far as the flavor, but definitely 100% transferable indoors as long as your hood system works properly above your range.
Yeah.
You don't want to smoke it out, so yeah.
Okay, so there's a charred guacamole with grilled corn, and this is my first experience with grilling avocados. So what happens to them?
Well, I mean, obviously, you want to act the opposite of normally shopping for avocados, where you're, you know, you want to eat them right away. So you're sort of making sure you're picking through the big pile of Haas or whatever type of avocados you're looking for. So this one, you actually want something maybe a little on the firmer side, you know, something that maybe a day or two before you're ready, and that'll sort of help protect it up against the grill a little bit.
So you cut them in half, and then the cut side down, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. And, you know, good spatula, obviously, you don't want to jam a pair of tongs and try to lift it up out of there. Treat it almost like a delicate piece of fish in this sense, you know. They're going to be firm, but, you know, it's kind of like grilling any fruit, mangoes and things like that. You just got to be, you know, careful with it. But it really, really, you know, because of the natural fat that's in there and just the texture of the avocado, it just absorbs the grill flavor almost immediately. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good way to use your unripe avocados or less ripe avocados. I always have them sitting on the counter, and you can't wait to use them.
Sure.
This is
sure.
a great, like, I can't wait to make guacamole another day for them to ripen. And you just have them. You can put them on the grill, and it works fine.
Here's another one. This is a pineapple jalapeno burger.
Mm-hmm.
And this is interesting. You combine ground sirloin and ground chuck.
That's right. Equal parts. Exactly.
And you're going to grill those pineapple slices. Can you use the canned ones or do you want the fresh ones?
Oh, come on now. you would like the fresh ones, but at the same time, they work fine. The issue sometimes that you find with the can is, you know, it's a textural thing. You know, it's all going to kind of feel like the same texture. You know, a fresh sliced pineapple, you're going to have multiple textures when you bite into it. And then the release of the actual juice is a little different from a fresh pineapple. But at the same time, they do work interchangeably.
Well, Chris, I'm just going to say the words to Chris because I know later on we're going to be doing more burgers on this show, but Gorgonzola stuffed hamburger, Chris. I'm just saying the words to you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. There's also a pineapple grilled pork tenderloin. Many of us on the show here were saying, David Guas, that we like grilled pineapple so much, and we can tell you do too. It's in a lot of your recipes.
Yes. Well, let me tell you one very personal story, which we did not mention in this particular recipe, but it's for another book, I guess. But my dad, you know, was born and grew up in Havana, Cuba, and he has a very vivid memory of growing up in Cuba and being on the beach. And his father, they used to cut a pineapple, leave the fronds on, but they would peel it down a little bit, not entirely, but they would throw it in the ocean, and it would float. And then, you know, after 15, 20 minutes or a half hour or so, they'd pull that pineapple out of the ocean salt water and they would slice it up. And, you know, for me, the Cuban, you know, my dad, one of his favorite go-to proteins was always pork tenderloin. So even though you know, the Hawaiian inspiration, this has a multiple place for me. So
are you, wait a minute.
Sweet
yeah,
salt.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh,
everybody on.
Hold, on. Hold your horses. Are you?
I just gave you a little preview.
Brine pineapple.
Oh, I've got to tell you. Are you telling me, in essence, he was brining a pineapple?
These two are going to tie pineapples behind their boats.
Louisiana.
Use them as a pickup buoy.
Now we know where to find it.
With booze, but here it was an infusion of the natural salt water, so ocean water.
Wow, and then he would grill that.
That's right, grill it, or just eat it right there, right off the beach.
Eat it raw.
Oh
yeah, of course. In the South, we salt our watermelon.
Me too. Oh, yep. That is fabulous. Oh, so there's a grilled flank steak with guacamole sauce. So flank steak and a little bit of dried chipotle powder. You can get that in many supermarkets now or online. Some fresh garlic and flour tortillas. So you're cooking the flank steak on the grill. Mm-hmm. And then cutting it into strips. And this guacamole sauce, tell me about that. You've got the ripe avocados, the jalapeno pepper, of course, some green onion in addition.
That's right, yep.
What's the fat-free sour cream doing in here? What?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It's a typo.
You know, we wanted to create a balanced book. We wanted people to kind of recognize, obviously, you don't have to use light sour cream, but it's the opposite. People often look at a recipe and see sour cream, and they go, huh, I wonder if I can use the low fat. So we actually reversed it and said you can use the low fat. So it's obvious that you can go the other direction.
You can, unless you're sugar sensitive. Okay, so lime zest, lime juice, salt, a pinch of sugar, and some fresh garlic to make that guacamole sauce. And you serve that on the side with tortillas. And you grill your tortillas when you serve them like that?
Yeah, just to kind of break the chill off of them and kind of soften them up a little bit. You want to see them on the grill for a couple seconds, exactly.
By the way, David Guaz is host of the Travel Channel's American Grilled. He's a frequent judge on that show. You've seen him probably grilling on the Today Show, too. And his book is called Grill Nation, 200 Surefire Recipes, Tips, and Techniques to Grill Like a Pro. And by that, we mean these are not hard recipes. And so the idea is for everybody to stop being scared of doing anything because experts are wagging their fingers at you. Just, it's grilling. You might make a few mistakes in the beginning, so what? Just keep at it. Maybe you overcook the hamburgers or the piece of fish, and next time you do it a little bit less. Don't be afraid. Okay, grilled steaks balsamico, balsamic vinaigrette, fig preserves, chuck eye steaks, beef chuck eye, salt and pepper, and a garlic and herb spreadable cheese. Now, what surprised me here, besides the cheese, was I thought this is a great combination, these fig preserves and that balsamic vinaigrette.
Mm-hmm.
And why the cut of chuck eye steaks?
You know, it was just, again, we wanted to show that, you know, a lot of different cuts can be used. And so, yes, we could have used another type of cut. But a lot of people look at this and think that, you know, a chuck eye can be kind of tough. And in this case, it really is not. And so I think we're just trying to break down sort of those misconceptions about different cuts of meat.
And can I make a pitch here for this next recipe we're going to talk about? Because this is a pitch for the kind of fish that you chose. I ordered catfish once because a friend from Mississippi was having a birthday, and this was for her food, catfish. Catfish is so delicious, it's nuts that we don't have this more here. So please, anybody, try it.
Can you find it?
Well, sure, if you go to your fish market and say, can you get me catfish? You know, go to a fish market. Say, can you get me some catfish? They can get it in a second. It was not wildly expensive. I had mine because my friend was from Mississippi. I had it shipped in from Mississippi with real hush puppies from Mississippi. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
Oh,
of course, there it is.
Okay, so blackened grilled catfish fillets. And how do you blacken them? What's your spice combo?
We take a blend of, you know, paprika and salt and, you know, garlic and some crushed pepper, cayenne. Also some dried spices like oregano and thyme. black pepper, and then a little bit of anchovy for a little of that smokiness. And you can use ancho chili pepper, or you can use like a smoked paprika if you'd like. But I just really think that that gives that sort of nice smoky edge to it. Mm. Really sort of enhances the grill. And then, yeah, the catfish fillets and a little olive oil. It's a very, you know, simple thing. And the beautiful thing about this is you make a batch of that, and obviously you can go on a lot of different things. It's not subject to catfish only, obviously. But, no, it's just a wonderful way to sort of – anytime you do a dry rub on fish or any other type of proteins, it just really can help sort of not only obviously give it an exterior flavor, but especially for a fish that tends to be – that can be a little softer and mild.
Like bluefish is great.
Yeah, exactly. Bluefish would be perfect, but you can use it to do other proteins. But it also helps to really create sort of a crust, which is great on the grill or cast iron, doesn't matter. But here in this case, we actually threw it on the grill. So
we love on this show. I do in my life do this a lot: grilled baby romaine, where you take the outer leaves off, and so you've got a smaller head underneath, and you grill this right on the grill. So you light your grill. And you cut your lemons. There are lemons in your recipe, and you grill those so that they get a beautiful mark. And these are half lemons. Then you squeeze the juice because that heat caramelizes and smokes up that lemon.
That's right, exactly right.
And then to that juice, you'd add some mustard and shallots and honey and salt and pepper. And set that aside, and then pull those old hard leaves off the outside of the head of romaine lettuce. And trim the bottom a little bit. It's nice and rinsed, of course. Cut them in half lengthwise. Drizzle them with olive oil. And then on the grill grate they go. And you just grill them till they're nice and charred. And then you put that dressing you made all over everything with some Parmigiano Reggiano shaved on there. Oh, that is
great. You know, I love grilled greens. I just always have. You know, certain lettuces just really pick up that grill and that char, that smoke flavor. And
is there another one? What other one would you do? Is there another lettuce?
I mean, frisé works great on the grill. Chars up nice. You know, heartier things, bok choy greens, things like that, any kind of those type of vegetables and greens. But, you know, romaine's a little tricky because it, you know, it tends to be, you know, a lot of water in it, so you have to be careful. But, you know, we played around with this, and it worked the first couple times. So I continue to serve it at the house. And, you know, we love those sort of nice, sharp flavors. And what happens with that lemon, like you were talking about, is, you know, once you slice it and you put it slice side down, you char those really, really well. And, you know, not only for this particular recipe, but it translates in a lot of different things. Grilled citrus works great. It's just serving a grilled piece on the side of a piece of fish.
I'm thinking cocktails.
Yeah, exactly. You can squeeze them and you can put them, and make a nice lemonade.
My gears are turning here.
It's like a little bourbon and some, you know, fresh.
Now you're talking.
Call it a day. And it's, you know, it's just, there's so many things you can do with it. And what happens is not only does it pick up all that flavor, but it also will loosen up that rind and really create a better yield of juice for you. It softens it up. It does wonders for sort of, you know, extracting all that juice and sort of softening up the skin so you can really get all the juice out.
You're great. I really like talking with you. Let's move into dessert as we come to the end of our conversation.
We should have started there, by the way.
I know, especially because what I'm about to describe is a bourbon chocolate pudding with salted caramel cream. Now, that is a beautiful thing. Tell me about this. How do you make the pudding?
Well, you know, it's an old school stovetop pudding. It doesn't get any more basic than that. When you start looking at that back at some older recipes from the South, you know, you'll see sometimes tapioca starch, you'll see sometimes corn starch, you'll see sometimes flour for puddings. This particular one, we use a little corn starch and thicken it. You know, good quality chocolate, and it's stovetop. So you've got your milk on the stove. You bring it up to a quick simmer, and you whisk it into some egg yolks, and sweeten it with a little bit of sugar, and thicken it with corn starch. You put it back on the stove, and it takes all of a few seconds to kind of heat it back up and thicken it nicely. Then you pull it back off the stove. You add your butter. You add your chocolate, and you call it a day.
I mean, wait a minute, darling. You didn't say something. What are you talking about? You the bourbon. You're missing bourbon.
Well, I hear chocolate.
That was in my glass, but yeah, you can put it, you know, in this particular recipe as
well. Yeah, you can. So vanilla extract goes in, and so this has got both whole milk, and it has an unsweetened Dutch processed cocoa powder plus some chunks of bittersweet chocolate, both together. And I get that.
That's
an interesting little profile. Okay, so easy to make that. Serve it in a glass with a little bit of cream, caramel cream. He tells you how to make that with some heavy cream, some regular sugar, a touch of salt. We love that. And some sugar. And so it's a caramel whipped cream that you've got there.
Correct.
And that goes on the top. There are other desserts in the book, too. Thank you so much, David Gwass, for being on the Food Schmooze.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And you guys got a studio full, and I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a lot of fun to talk food and talk Grill Nation.
Okay. And the book, information about the book and David on our website, and also that pineapple grilled tequila chicken burger is on our website there too, foodschmooze.org. Please support your local food growers and food makers. You can find everything we talk about on that website. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
If I don't love you, baby, grits ain't grocery, eggs ain't poultry, and Mona Lisa was a man. And run off through the jungle, fight lions with a switch, because you know I love you, baby. Oh, you know I love you, baby.
I'm Faith Middleton with the gang. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. The whole gang is here. We have special guests this time. But first, I want to tell you about, oh, you know, what we're calling the hottest scene in Connecticut. I think it is the party of the year. And there are corporations that are going out and buying blocks of our martini competition tickets to say thank you to their employees and to their clients. We appreciate that so much. I hope more of you will do this. Of course, this benefits WNPR and the Food Schmooze. But here's the event that you're invited to. Statewide bartenders shake up these innovative martinis, and you vote after tasting at all the stations for the Food Schmooze Martini Champion. There are designated driver discounts. We want you to drink responsibly. And there are great top chefs providing food. The DJ is so hot, so fabulous, really sizzling music. Mm-hmm. It sells out. People dance. They pool for car service. All the inns and hotels are sold out. The stations these bartenders create are so, so amazing. These are individual events in themselves. It is Thursday, June 25th at 6 at Simsbury's Riverview. Thanks to Power Station Events, you know, we have special lighting and table design, and it's really amazing. Tickets are $60 each. You can order now at ctmartini.org. That should be easy to remember, ctmartini.org. And we did apply officially, filled out that application to the Guinness Book of World Records for the largest martini competition. So we'll see what happens with that. We have not heard back from them yet, but we expect to. And in the meantime, we are excited about this event. We will all be there, and we cannot wait to see you. All right, here's what we're doing now. Alex Province, as you might know, and Matthew Bennett, his spouse, they just sent me a photo of their meal on their sailboat, which is called Jack Tar. And that meal, first of all, the boat looks amazing, but that meal is just, looks so, so good, Alex. So we just, really, what did you make?
So we had corn, and we soak our corn in salt water. We had, you know, lots of roasted veggies like zucchini that we coat with mayonnaise and salt and pepper, and just red peppers with olive oil. We did a couple of ribeyes that we marinated with Ina Garten's coffee grounds and, you know, spices, and just sort of actually quite healthy with lots of veggies.
Great. Good for you. And so we decided to find out.
Oh, baked potatoes. with bacon.
Oh, yeah.
Forgot.
Seriously?
And sour cream and butter.
We decided to find out how boating chefs in general make the food they do. And it seems that boating people love food. I don't know what it is. And they make it in these small spaces. They have these great meals with their friends, especially in Connecticut. This is a very, very big thing. So I'd like you to meet Michelle Carney of Granby, Connecticut, and Curtis Dennison of Hartford. Welcome to the Food Schmooze Party, both of you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
It's a pleasure. So what's the scene at the dock? What is it like? Is that where most of the cooking happens, right at dockside when you're tied up?
Absolutely it does. It's a great camaraderie.
People get together. They don't even have to plan with one another. They just bring. So it's the ultimate potluck of gourmet dining. I think that's what we have to say. We can whip up meals that are gourmet, and we don't have to seek the restaurants.
How are you doing that? In these little small...
It's an ounce of preparation, for sure.
So ahead of time, you're thinking ahead the way that chefs have
exactly.
to think ahead.
Absolutely.
So you're...
It's a preparation. But once you get the fresh ingredients, which are abundant in Connecticut from the farmers and the markets, we have Bishop's Orchards right next to us. So if we want to go get a fresh pineapple, fresh avocado, a peach that we want to grill, or we want to get certain spices, we may stop on our way in from Hartford and go to Penzi's and get spices. But it's having a few of significantly tasteful ingredients.
And the farmer stands, in most cases, create great inspiration for a meal.
And you're planning ahead what your meals are going to be?
Yes.
Or do you ever do it on the fly?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Most of the time.
Yes. Most of the time. Except I said to you, each of you, send me a couple of your recipes that seem to be hits with your friends and family. And what do I get? I get bolognese, which I thought, what? So, and I got making fresh ricotta, which
yes.
you do that at home, I suppose.
No, actually, I do that right on board.
You do?
Yeah,
okay.
It's a one-pot cheese, so it's very simple.
I know. Thank you for these recipes. We've got them on the website right now, foodschmooze.org. And so that was from you. And then from Michelle, you and Pat, your husband, gave me a recipe for cucumber mango rice, which sounds so delicious.
It's because the in thing in that recipe is the coconut water. And everyone is all about, the healthy. So
Rehydration.
So you just keep one of those containers, the plastic,
cartons.
And it's
of
so delicious.
It goes with rice. I mean, it goes with chicken. It goes
Use
with
that
a beef.
Instead of water?
Instead
mm-hmm.
of water.
Oh, she's boiling
cool.
the rice in that coconut
Correct.
Water.
Then the rice gets cold, and you're throwing in at the last minute chopped up mango, English cucumber, and sprinkling on the top cashews.
Oh, yeah.
My God, it's to die for.
That's not hard to do.
It's not your
so
traditional
good.
Potato salad. You're not coming with your,
And whether you serve it with chicken or fish or lamb or whatever.
I like potato salad.
I do too, but by the middle of the summer, I'm looking for something different.
I know. Well, this is really fantastic. So, Alex, you can relate to this, although I think you do your cooking. Do you do most of your cooking docked or moored?
We cook it aboard down below in the galley.
But are you moored when you're doing it?
We cook ours on the mooring. So we're floating, and we have to contend with the wakes of
boaters
going by.
So,
I'll call down, I see a wave. Matt, hold on to the pot.
Right.
Wow.
We have a grill on the back of our boat.
That's us too, yeah.
So, and most people do. They'll travel with a grill. You set that grill up in less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And your
charcoal grill, right?
Have a propane.
They're propane.
We have propane.
Really? Yeah. Is that what you have?
Yeah.
Propane.
You don't really want charcoal on a boat.
Yeah, you don't want those flames.
That's right.
Well, we get plenty of flames.
That's a side story.
Yeah, that's a different.
Matt's always holding the towel to keep the wind from dissipating
exactly.
the heat.
Exactly. Oh, my God. We held that towel.
Don't catch the towel on fire.
And so you quickly can do, just like everyone just said, you may have made the side in the morning because you made your cabin warm because you turned on your generator and you threw on the one pot to make the rice, or you might have done your corn. But by the time the evening comes and you're just ready to throw the flank steak or the chicken or whatever on, you have gourmet sides to go with it, and you might throw on some zucchini with the balsamic dressing on the grill as the vegetable. So you're combining a little last-minute cooking with preparation.
With preparation.
With preparation in mind.
And do you just sit around in chairs, or do you sit at a table on your boats?
Well, we sit at the table mostly.
We sit at the table with linen napkins.
Exactly.
We're very fussy. Yeah. Wow. Fresh flowers.
Nice dinner music. Well. Yeah.
The music, the ambiance.
Yeah.
Good glass of wine.
And
so do people say, hey, that looks good, and do you say, come on board and try some of this? Or is it
sometimes.
Pretty?
Sometimes. Sometimes we're selfish.
Sometimes we say, sorry, not enough.
Yeah.
But you can come anytime.
No, no, thank you. I mean, what could you possibly say to me at this moment?
I think that people have, and the people that are not boaters, that you do your invitations all summer, they come on board and they're like, but I don't know how you do it. It's always like in awe. How do you do it? Well, the same way you do at home, I just don't occupy as much space. So I might have to turn and be more aware of, okay, let me cut up all of those ingredients. And it doesn't matter what you're making. You can make the same things and better because you are prepared. And
what better place to cook than on the water?
I mean, your view.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Our only concern is we love making chicken curry.
Oh,
love and it. Since you have no hood on a sailboat, right?
Stinky.
So I'm always like, oh, the headliner, you know, the ceiling of the boat, I always feel like is going to get covered with curry. So you open up the hatches and I get like a great wind blowing it straight out. And Matt's like, let's have chicken curry. Enough chicken curry.
So this is like camping.
Right? It's really. In some respects, it is. Yeah. In some respects, it is.
And food tastes as good as it does when you're camping. It
Absolutely.
Tastes better.
Absolutely.
Something about being cold and outside and food just tastes.
And
better.
You can do it with maybe 5 appliances or pots where people say, well, I wouldn't have my double boiler or I wouldn't have this size frying pan. If you have a good pot, a good frying pan, a good grill, and a saucepan, I mean, whether he makes his bolognese and then he's sitting there putting his cheese through the cheesecloth, then we sit down, he's made the whatever pasta, and one of us has made a phenomenal salad. It's always about, well, what's going to just go with it? But it's still an amazing.
It's a lot of mixta or something, right?
Yeah. Or an antipasto of some nature.
Well, and I chose that recipe primarily because of the fact that, you know, we start our boating season in middle of April.
Right.
And it continues right through Halloween.
Yeah.
So at the beginning as well as at the end, you really do want some of these heartier meals. Because it is cold out there.
Yeah.
And so you're on board, you're on board water that in some cases is 45, 50 degrees. Yeah. So it's nice to have a nice warm meal.
So chopped onion and carrot and garlic for your bolognese and sweet pork, ground up, red pepper flakes, tomato paste, tomato sauce, olive oil, balsamic vinegar, grated pecorino romano, and half and half. So where are you keeping all these ingredients? You know, where are you storing?
Oh, I keep them all on board.
But in the refrigerator, I mean, the refrigerator is a little tiny thing. Right?
Yeah, it's a smaller below-the-counter refrigerator.
You just stuff it in.
You just stuff it in every which way. Refrigerators actually work better the more is in them. So at the end of the day, they work beautifully when they're chock full of food.
Wow. Finding stuff is the hard part. Man.
That's
like,
exactly.
It's in there. Where is it?
So you unload everything out onto the floor.
Okay, your fresh ricotta, Curtis, is whole milk, heavy cream, kosher salt, and white wine vinegar, or you could use lemon juice.
Yeah, you just need the acid to get the cheese to curdle.
There's a strainer with a cheesecloth in it.
Yeah.
You pour the milk and the cream together and the salt into a pot.
I like to use a Lecrozet just so that it doesn't burn at the bottom.
So boil it and stir it, and then add the vinegar to that or the lemon juice. Stir it. Let it set there for a few minutes.
Yeah, and take it off the heat so that it doesn't cook anymore.
And the curds start to form, right?
Exactly.
And then you pour it into that strainer sieve, and it drains for about a half an hour. And the longer it drains, the firmer the cheese, and you have fresh ricotta to go with your bolognese.
And
it's
absolutely delicious.
It's absolutely
nothing
creamy.
Better than a fresh ricotta.
Oh, that is so true.
Scooped
oh my god!
On top.
Do you guys raft up with friends like on an
we
anchor?
Have.
And
yeah,
we have
absolutely.
It's always fun, and everyone cooks something and figure out whose boat to eat it on or whatever. Pass the wine.
I'm sorry we couldn't have your whole gang. I understand there's a whole gang. To the gang, I say apologies. But you can see We are now sharing microphones in the studio to make sure that we could talk with you both. Thank you so much for being on the Food Schmooze.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for letting us taste and everything and being a part of today.
It was so fun to have you. Made it really fun for us. Michelle Carney of Granby, Connecticut, and Curtis Dennison of Hartford, and they and the gang will be docked this year, as always, at the Guilford Yacht Club. And when you smell something delicious in the air, start looking around. It's probably these people. Okay. Invite yourselves over.
Please do.
Come on down.
Come on down. Thank you.
Thank you. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime, thanks to the thousands of you who are visiting the website and having conversations with us. You've got food products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails that we feature, foodschmooze.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.